Well, good morning, everyone. We just finished a session this morning, started last Monday evening as the rain started to come down. If you all hesitate to come to session because it's raining, it's not necessary. You can do it. We did it for 4 days in a raging storm, and it was so cool. There was every different kind of rain. There were big, fat, heavy drops. There were times when it seemed like they just emptied a barrel right on top of us. There was horizontal rain that slammed into the building. There were little misty, fine, sparkling gold, silver. It was just incredible. And once there was a slammed into the building and a scream. It just went bam like that. And probably 80 or 90 miles an hour. One of those that just got away and came down into the valley. So it was exciting, but it was also excellent for putting us in our place. You couldn't be anywhere else, and you couldn't be any bigger than you ever thought you were, because it was so big. So it's, I recommend it. We have a session at this time of year because it's when in the Soto lineage we celebrate, I'm not sure celebrate is the right word, we recognize Buddha's Parinirvana Day, his passing away. We don't actually know the real date. It's not important. But there was a Buddha, there was an actual person who did actually die around this time at the age of 80. And we know the story, or at least there are stories about it, that at least reflect the fact that the place where he was cremated is still there. We chant the name of it every morning and every lunchtime, Kusinagar. Kusinagara, we say, because that's the old-fashioned name. It's now called Kusinagar. And just as it was in Buddhist time, it's a dreary little town. When Buddha was dying, he first, he visited many little villages that he had been to before and stayed with people and sort of tied everything up slowly as he walked around that whole area until finally he was really quite ill. My favorite part is that Ananda, his attendant, said to him one day, "Gee, Buddha, you don't look so good anymore." He said, "You used to be shining and sort of golden glow around you, and man, you don't look good at all anymore." And he said, "You know, I'm old, Ananda. Didn't I tell you everything falls apart? Well, I'm falling apart too." So when he got very, very ill, he finally said, "Let's go to Kusinagar." And Ananda said, "Oh, you don't want to go to there, that dumpy little place. That's a terrible place to go. It's hardly anything there. It's just a nothing place." And Buddha said, "No, I'll go there." So he lay down between two trees, two sala trees, it says in the book. A sala tree, I don't know what it is, but I have an imagination of it, which you can probably create one yourself. His mother was holding on to one as she was laboring to give him birth 80 years before. So he lay between the trees and slowly passed away. But before he passed away, they all gathered around him, the ones who actually could get there, and many of his disciples couldn't even make it because it was remote and it just happened. But the ones who were there said, "How in the world can we keep on without you? You know, what are we supposed to do?" And he said, "I never was telling you what to do. You're having to find out what to do yourself." He said, "No one can know for you. That you yourself," he said, "are an island in the world." Or sometimes it said, "You're a light. Be your own light. Don't depend on, you can't depend on others. There is no stable, solid thing to hold on to. It's you, you yourself. Live." So, Dogen said about this light, "A whole person originally has this radiant light. The radiant light is each and every person. Everyone exerts the radiant light in his, her personal and environing circumstances." Exerting the radiant light is different from just sitting back and shining. Exertion is really the bottom line for us as human beings. It's an effort to live. And to live well is quite a large effort. Not large gestures, not a big effort in the sense of going out and doing big deeds, but simply getting up in the morning, washing our face, making breakfast. And often we discount it so much. We discount our life. We keep waiting for our real life to begin. When is that going to start? The good life. The holy life and the spiritual life. This is it. That's what Buddha was telling everyone. He just went around with a loving heart and encouraged people to be who they were, live as they could, face life as it is. They would come to him with challenges and problems. You know, the famous story of the woman who lost a child, and she wanted him to bring it back to life. Can't be done. So sitting practice sits us down in one place. If we're fortunate, it's a quiet place, but it doesn't have to be quiet. It's probably better if it's quiet, because then we're not so distracted. But wherever it is, whether we're distracted by machines or the blue jays, it's all us. All of our experience is ours. It's not somewhere or someone else. It's this. And in sitting, this, Coben called it a cosmic light, this cosmic inner sense of us, that backward step that we take as we sit, not turning off, not obliterating our thinking and getting all spaced out. It's not about getting spaced out. It's about being alive and present with every breath. I've been reading a very interesting book called Dogen on Meditation and Thinking. It's kind of complicated. It's written by Heejee Kim, who has written several books about Dogen that are very wonderful in my book, and quite complex. But he has some, in the complexity, has ways of simplifying as well. It's made me realize again how valuable it is to study. Our whole life to study. There is so much wisdom to encounter. If you've just started to sit, I would say don't read anything. Don't cloud your mind with a lot of fancy ideas about what's supposed to be going on. We don't know what's supposed to be going on. It is whatever is going on. That's what's supposed to be going on. But if you've been sitting for quite a while, it's very helpful to expose your mind and deepen your practice by careful study. And even memorizing, even knowing the Heart Sutra by heart, knowing the Metta Sutra. They're so helpful. Even in the middle of some kind of disaster in your life, you can call up the Metta Sutta. May all beings be happy. Oh. We need ways to shift our thinking. And study is one way. There's so much speed, so much of the surface busyness that we all get thrown into. Our life is so busy, and there's so many things going on, and so much that catches our attention. That to have ways of coming back. Oh, it's right here. Right here, right now. So Thich Nhat Hanh has all kinds of tricky things to do with that. You know, if the telephone rings, you stop where you are and breathe for 5 breaths, I think. And then you slowly go to the phone and answer. It's a whole different experience. And who you are when you answer the phone is a different person from the one who is scrambling to get it. So this is a kind of study as well. Studying the self as we navigate our life. Seeing what happens and how we can help ourselves. The things that we can do to encourage ourselves and to keep our faith in ourselves, our trust. So in this book of Heejee Kim on Dogen and meditation and thinking, he said, Dogen frames his religion not so much in terms of whether to practice, but rather how to practice. In a specific daily schedule, this was the question Dogen pursued throughout his monastic life. How to practice in a specific daily situation? This was the question Dogen pursued throughout his monastic life. Well, man, oh man, that's ours too. That's just what we're trying to do. How do we navigate this life? This practice in our everyday, daily, ordinary, stumbling, bumbling, ignorant daily life. And still keep faith. Still stay connected. So further on, Heejee Kim does a very interesting thing. He does a little shtick on Shikantaza. We talk about Shikantaza a lot. It's how we sit. Only just sitting. It means only just. Or I read somewhere, it's a stuck down sitting. I think that's really such a fine way, especially if you're on a cushion with your legs all tangled up, you can't get anywhere, you're just really stuck there. But it's not a very thorough description of anything. Although in a way, it's such a simple thing that we tend to burden it with too much defining, trying to make a fancy kind of practice out of something that is exceedingly simple. It's simple but complex, as we know. Just maintaining is probably one of the harder parts of it. Just bringing ourselves back to the cushion every day. Just finding places and times to cultivate our sitting, our only just sitting. Study is fine, but sitting is the essence. So if you have to choose, choose a cushion. Kichi Kim calls this Shikantaza in a nutshell. And it's, I hope I can see this. It's numbered. There are four of them. Number one is, it is that seated meditation which is objectless, imageless, themeless, with no internal or external devices or supports, and is non-concentrative, decentered, and open-ended. Yet it is heightened, sustained, and total awareness of the self and the world. It's just sitting. No gimmicks. No fancy little tricks. It's just sitting. Number two, it seeks no attainment whatsoever, be it enlightenment, an extraordinary religious experience, supernormal powers, or Buddhahood, and accordingly is non-teleological and simply ordinary. It's no big deal. Number three, it is the body-mind cast off as the state of ultimate freedom, also called the samadhi of self-fulfilling activity. Number four, it requires single-minded earnestness, resolve, and urgency on the part of the meditator. I like this a lot, but what strikes me most about it is this is the way to live as well. It's exactly a description if we want to know how am I going to go home and live my life. Is the way to do it without trying to get something, no attainment, with true earnestness, and without being with total awareness of the self and willing to open up so that the self drops off. So that when we're in any kind of situation, that we're actually there for it. I spoke yesterday about respect, that respect is based on how we actually experience, can experience what comes before us. We are constantly meeting whatever, the clouds and the grass and the trees and the tax forms and the radio and blah, 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 everything. Everything comes into us. Mostly we tune it out. So this earnestness that he means and simple-mindedness and urgency is to be there as you are for whatever it is. Even if it's just to turn off the radio. But instead of living an automatic life, to be engaged as we engage Zazen without knowing, without having a big plan of being some kind of special something. We are already a special something. We're already there. We're remarkable. And we don't amount to a hill of beans. So, honestly, studying ourselves and honestly and authentically living ourselves is how Zazen is. It's the same practice. We sit and we open up. We get up and close and open and open as we meet things, as things go on. We have to be careful. Can't get run over. Got to stop with the red light and go with the green. Be sensible, be rational, be realistic. Maybe we could say this is a very, very realistic practice. It is not romantic. But at the same time, it's quite marvelous. And to have sat a whole session, we have experienced an opportunity to taste a bit more of life and allow the experience to be what it is. So I hope we all have a chance to do it one time or another time. Jikoji is such a fantastic place to find a stable, sit, and just open up. So that's what I brought to say. You must have something to add. Please. Yeah?
You mentioned faith. What is faith?
Well, the Latin word is fidens, fidensa, and we call it confidence. And so you can hear in confidence what faith is. If we're confident, it means we're coming from here. We're trusting ourselves and trusting our life. It doesn't have to be some great religious devotional thing, but it can be. I mean, we can have faith in Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, and I think if you continue to practice, that grows just naturally as we are touched by the teaching and the practice. We can't help but begin to trust the practice and where it comes from. But in Buddhism, we don't say you have to believe this. It's not about believing anything. It's about self-discovery.
So it's about trusting yourself. Is it about trusting it?
Yes. Yeah. You.
I have a question about people who haven't felt the calling to come to a place like this yet. In my workplace and otherwise, there are a lot of people who ask, what is this meditation thing and should I try it?
Mm-hmm.
And so I very much enjoy your talk because sometimes I say, yes, definitely try it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't read about it, try it. But often I also feel the urge to say, if you have something like gardening or being with your children or taking a run that makes you feel present with life, taste life, as you say, then do that.
Brava. That's great. That's great. That is practice.
Right.
Of course.
Yeah, so I think it's still, I don't know when to really recommend a sitting practice.
Yes.
Because people just don't know how to fit one more thing, especially a thing that they don't know what it is. And it does seem that meditation is a way for us to just be there.
Yes.
And yeah, so I'm asking, like, you must get this question, and how do you answer appropriately?
Well, it's different with every situation, of course, but it's also one reason that we created Jikoji, because you can tell people that this place is here. It's in a beautiful place that you can take walks all through the hills. And if you want to, you can come in and experience sitting. And that takes the onus off of it and makes it just kind of a holiday. But it gives the opportunity to taste it. And you can taste it even if you don't come in the Zendo. So I think this is... it's a small thing, but it's what we are offering to the Bay Area. Yeah. Yes.
You refer to the mind, and I want to know, do you mean the mind or the mind? What's, I guess, the difference or your reference?
Well, we have to say mind because we have the language of it. But what it's usually referred to as my body, sometimes with a slash. I think it just runs together, just like life and death will run together. They're one thing. And we don't know how to say them as one thing. We have to distinguish it. Because we experience body as different from mind, even though now they know that our bellies are full of thinking too, rational thinking in our belly, as well as going on in our head. And even those things aren't exactly mind. Nobody knows really what mind is. They're still trying to find consciousness somewhere. And it's very interesting, but nobody can do it. There are a lot of theories about it, but none of them agrees. So it's all sort of pointing to something, pointing to our own experience of mind as body life, and body life as mind. That it's the same.
The whole.
Yes. The whole disaster, as somebody said. It's what we've got. That's a good question. Yeah.
You noted that when you just begin to sit, you said, just sit, don't read anything. But when you become more advanced or you've sat for some time, then it's useful. How do you know when you're ready for this external guidance?
Well, I think this is a practice of learning to trust yourself. It helps to have reference to teachers or students who've been doing this for a long time who could help you make up your mind. But it's your mind and your experience. So I always say in terms of swimming that if you don't know how to swim and you've never seen the water, you don't want to read a book about it. You want to go and get somebody to show you how to swim. And then after you really learn to swim pretty well, then you get interested in what they've done. Maybe the Australians have figured out a new way of breathing so you could do it this way. And then, you know, you get, so then it becomes helpful to read. So you can kind of figure it out.
Okay. So body mind slash or body mind, and I like your question. So in there's then stories of some guy stubs his toe and body mind shows up right away.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. There are stories where some guy looks into a pool of water and bam, body mind shows up. Yeah.
So do you. I guess we like to differentiate.
Yes.
And what's body, what's mind, but maybe it's better to just relax into the, that it's all together then.
Well, that's why I use this, that story yesterday of the donkey looking in the well. You know, one guy asks, what do you think our practice is, this body-mind thing? And his friend said, oh, I think it's a donkey looking in a well. And his friend said, oh, that's a good answer, but I think it's a well, also a well looking at a donkey. So that's another way of parsing it. It's
so the what you're stubbing your toe into is part of the body mind as well then.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the rock and the ground and the grass and the stars. The whole kit and caboodle.
I also appreciate this exert your
yes.
life. I haven't heard that before, but there's a lot of work to that, but there that's what we do. We have to manifest. We have to, as Kategori said, you have to say something. You have
yes.
to show up. You have to get out of bed and
yes.
tend the kids or
yes. Go to work. Do your work. And do it with urgency, with intention. And if you don't like your work so much, then do something else. I think that's important too. If we grind on year after year on something that is hurting us, it's not good for the world or for us. We need something that is fulfilling, the word that Dogen used, fulfilling our life. What is that? And that, of course, is our biggest question. We're always asking, is this part of my fulfillment? Sometimes it's obvious, and sometimes it's not so obvious. And we need to trust our not knowing. It's fine not to know. It's a good place to be. Actually. as then we're available to many, many different new things that can come along. Andy, sorry. You're far, far away.
Your message on trusting yourself is interesting to me. And what is trust in practice? And there are some teachers and teachings who will mention that. I don't see it quite as often in terms of personally. I don't see it quite as often. But then there are other teachers and teachings who emphasize you have no self. You have all these biases and, you know, momentums and all these things that you can't really trust. And so the kind of, and to me it can seem, sometimes there's glimpses of that there's an illusory quality, but it can feel very doctrinal at the same time. And very cognitively oriented. And with a practice that, to me, can seem very non-conceptual at its core. And so it can seem like two sides that are either sometimes contradicting each other or are just part of a dynamism or a paradox. And I guess that's where my question is coming from, is like sometimes the emphasis on the teachings is just a little different, you know, and may have its validity, but it just seems like sometimes, you know, it's like, oh, trust yourself. No, you can't trust yourself. You know, like, you know, where is that?
We live paradox. We live illusion. It's all illusion in a way. And the paradox that we meet over and over, that's how our mind works. We say it's this or that. It's up or it's down. It's in or it's out, or it's black or it's white. And I have an old friend, when she was dying, she got very interested and started making a list of all the opposites that we know in English. And it was such a long, long list. It kept her mind sort of alive while she was passing away. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Because that's how our mind is working. It's got to be this or it's got to be that. But actually, the truth is, it isn't ever that way. There's always some element of both in both. Nagarjuna spent his whole life trying to elucidate this and show us how our mind is working, so that if we posit the positive side, yes, it's this, 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 but how about this? Oh, so there's a middle place of not knowing and allowing both sides to exist. That in some sense there is truth in everything that we think. And some of it is rational and some of it's not. This is Hee Ji Kim. He talks about Dogen's saying that bad people, evil people, are just irrational. That you shouldn't consider them to be bad. They just haven't thought it through. Which is a very interesting way of taking that opposite thing about good and evil and creating something that actually works. It opens it up rather than closes it down. It's a real good question, because that is what happens, the teaching. But dropping the self doesn't mean obliterating yourself. It means seeing through the story of yourself that you yourself are manufacturing based on your conditioning, based on your likes and dislikes. We all have a story that we call me. And the more transparent we can be about that, the more honest we can be. And the more direct and straightforward we can be. We're not always trying to manufacture a response to something to fit with our picture of ourselves rather than our actual response, which might be a little different. To just respond as you, yourself, that you, yourself, is the real one that you can forget because it knows what to do already. It's like when you talk, you don't figure it all out ahead of time. The talking comes. You don't know where from where. That you can trust. Do we stop at 11:30? 12:30. Oh, gosh. I think, I thank you. Oh, Bree?
I just wanted to thank you for that last thing you said about, there are no evil people, there's just people that are irrational. That's very helpful.
Yes.
But also, there's this book called The Aramaic Jesus, I think, and it's a telling of the Bible, but it's sort of a different translation, an earlier translation of the Bible, and good and evil were actually, the words were ripe and unripe. Mm. And that just made me think of that with that exchange too.
Oh, that's nice. Mm-hmm.
More rounder.
Yes, yes. It's inclusive. Yes, yeah. Oh, that's great. That's a great thing to stop on. Thank you.